All right, guys, welcome to Property Profits Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Kaminsky, filling in for Dave Dubow. And have you ever wondered how dyslexia could be a superpower in real estate investing? Today, I have Darren Wright, who, despite facing challenges, skyrocketed from 0 to 50 units in just 2.5 years using the Burr model and strategic joint ventures. Darren, welcome to the show. Excited to dive into your unique story.
Thank you for having me. I'm very grateful to be here.
So that, based on the intro, definitely that must be challenging because there's a lot of, well, let's just throw it out to the room here. How does that challenge you in real estate specifically?
I don't see it as a challenge. I see it as a great advantage at the moment. I've seen it as a challenge in the past, but my strength is problem solving. And when you're trying to put a deal together or satisfy sellers, negotiation, it's all about problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
I just find different ways of putting deals together, putting partners together and investors. Mm-hmm. And any problems I may have, like some of the spellings, the reading, I've got a team to help me. My wife helps me extremely a lot for most of it. Mm-hmm. You got lawyers, you got accountants, you got realtors, everybody helps you. So whatever weaknesses are, you just got to fill them in with great people on your team and then use your strengths for your strengths to lead the team.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's rewind it a little bit. Let's play the tape back and tell me, how did you get started in real estate?
How did I get started? Well, I'm a qualified electrician, so I've always done electrical work, and I've always worked for real estate investors in the past, renovating their properties. So I've always had an interest in the construction side. And around 7 years ago, I started flipping houses, and then I partnered up with my wife now. We flipped houses together.
Mm-hmm.
So we were flipping single family homes, and then obviously, we wanted to move into keeping more the buy and hold, to
mm-hmm. rent it.
And then once I learned the Burr model, well, that puts everything together. So,
yeah, the flipping model can be a bit of a treadmill. You get tired of it after a while. You say, how can I not go and do this over and over and over again? I mean, the Burr method, at least you get to keep it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I learned you should flip to Burr one at least. And then you can keep the income coming in, and then you've got your long-term investment.
Yeah, you've got actual wealth being generated. So, with all you've accomplished, Robert Kiyosaki calls it the unfair advantage. What would you say comes easy to you that other people might find difficult to do?
The problem solving, definitely the problem solving, and I'm good with numbers. So I'm very good at analyzing and underwriting the deals. I'm not emotional. I'm very pragmatic in what I do. So I fall in love with the numbers. I never fall in love with a property. The property is always second.
Mm.
Obviously, it doesn't, even if it's a great cash flow, I don't want to buy something that's junk, but it does come together. I'm not emotional about the property first.
Yeah, don't fall in love with your houses. Fall in love with the numbers. I like that. So, 50 in 2.5 years, definitely you need partners for that. At what point did you start working on JVs and strategic partnerships to really grow that portfolio? How many before the bank cut you off?
Well, it wasn't the bank. I was good with the bank when I was doing the flipping houses, mm-hmm. but it was a divorce that wiped me out. I had to sell mm-hmm. everything that I'd built up, and I had to close my business and sell that off. So I had to start from zero. And that is when I learned I had to partner up with people, and I was already moving to the next step of wanting to buy an apartment building. So we put that together. Being wiped out and starting from scratch was the best thing that could happen because I had all the education that I built up from before and the credibility that I built up with my networks. And then having no money, I needed to partner up with people who could raise money, who were good at that part. And that's how we were able to scale so quick with partners. So then we started 2.5 years ago. and got units. And in 2 days' time, we take possession of a 48-unit building. So we will be at 98 by the end of the week.
Well, there you go. Congratulations. That's huge. How did you come across that deal?
Working with realtors. It was an exclusive deal. It wasn't on the market. So, again, it's building a team and working with people and treating them well. And then it starts to come together. I know it seems like we built it very quickly, but it's been years in the making by building relationships, you know, building credibility and proving that we can do it.
Yeah, it's almost like people always say, oh, look at that musician or that band. They blew up overnight, but they don't see the like 10 years of playing to no one and, you know, struggling to get a record deal and all the things they had to go to. And then suddenly they're an overnight success. Well, no, there's always, you know, there's always a backstory that it always looks like an overnight success to the people who weren't there all the way through. So, and that's really interesting what you say about working with the right people, and especially in the multifamily business. I feel like apartments are kind of an insider trading game. You know, you can find deals for houses on MLS sometimes and calling them up, but certainly with apartments, it seems to be an insider trading. So beyond this, are you happy now? Are you finally done, or are you going to keep going?
No, we're going to keep going. Our goal in 5 years is to get to 2,500 units.
And oh, wow.
Obviously, to do that, we're going to start buying it in the U.S. So yeah. That's his next step. Our phase one was always to get to 100 units in Canada around our local area. Mm-hmm. And then expand it to maybe other provinces, but definitely states, because they have the population where we can scale and you know, buy 100, 200 and more.
Yeah, they've got a lot more of those larger units, 100 units, 200 units. And in Canada, those are relatively rare, especially if you don't have several million people in that city. It doesn't make sense. So, you know, with all you've accomplished in real estate so far, what would you say your biggest obstacle is these days?
These days, probably time. You know, deals take a long time to come together, you know, from where we look at lots of deals. You don't buy every deal that you look at. So there's a lot of time looking at them and analyzing them and then, you know, talking to partners and seeing which ones we want to move forward with. And then, you know, the banks take the time when we're financing them or refinancing them. So that's always a hold up with trying to turn the money over, especially with a BRRRR model. You want to get in, do the renovations, and get your money back out and move on to the next deal. So,
yeah, especially when you're dealing with multifamily, like in the commercial space, it might take 6 months just to close on something, whereas in the single family business and the business of duplexes, you could have a next week possession. It's a simple transaction. But when you start looking at multifamily, there's definitely a lot more steps and a lot more, you know, six month acquisition might be a quick in comparison to how long it can take sometimes to put those deals together. So with these acquisitions, as the number of units gets larger, what are you doing right now these days, or rather these days, to fund these deals?
Partners bring the money in, you know, do the buying side, and we're the working partner. So we take care of the property management, take care of any renovations, looking after trades, you know, finding the deal as well and setting it up. And then, you know, we as partners, we do an equity split and profits, and obviously try and pull as much money out as we can and get their money back to the money raisers or investors. Yeah. Depending on the deal. You know, some we do a buy and hold and some we BRRRR.
Yeah. So with the funding of these larger projects, are you finding it more difficult to find partners or about the same? How's the experience versus what you were doing before now with the larger multifamily?
It's the same. Just bigger numbers. And our broker has actually said he wants us to find deals that are over 5 million because they're easier to find money when they're over 5 million. Because you know, the lenders at that stage, it's the same work, whether they're lending you $1 million for a property or $5 million. So they prefer to do the five. So,
oh yeah, I'm sure the broker would love to process the $5 million deal instead of the $1 million deal, because it is the same amount of paperwork. So, what are you doing right now to raise money from those existing connections? Like, you've already have a list. They might not be the ideal investor, but how are you finding that sort of transition going?
Well, with the investors, it's what do you want? How do you want to invest? Because some want to invest the money and bring it out, you know, within 6 months, which is ideal for a flip project. But if they want to put the money in and keep the money in there, then we do a buy and hold. So it's all about matching what the investor wants with projects that are coming up and keeping them informed. Because if investors are not really on board, we don't go with them.
So what have you found to be the most effective way to keep in touch with your investors and your prospects?
Just communication. You know, if the local would sit down and have coffee, or it's emails, text messages, phone calls, just really keeping in touch and let them know. As soon as we're looking and analyzing, then, you know, we start talking to our main partner, really, and say, hey, we've got this coming up.
Sorry, go ahead.
This is what we expect out of it at this stage. You know, we do it close to the beginning. And then you say, no, that one was a wash. It didn't just work out. So,
you start really early in the process, letting them know what you're working on.
Yeah, because sometimes they have to see if they got funds coming. You know, they don't invest in the bank. You know, it's always invested somewhere. So it's wherever.
Yeah, that's a great tip.
Yeah.
So, are you a find the deal and then the money person, or do you prefer to have your capital lined up and then go looking for deals?
I'm always looking for deals and always looking for capital. So it's a bit of 50-50, I'd say. Always letting people know that, okay, if you have somebody good, then we'll let you know when we have something that fits. But we're constantly looking at deals, and most of the deals we get, we don't have the money for them straight away. But if it's a good deal, the money comes pretty easy.
Okay, so tell me, you know, as you probably know, for people to invest significant amounts of money, they typically have to know you, like you, and ultimately trust you. What are you doing for each of these things?
But networking. We live in Brandon, and the networking that we go to be with like-minded real estate people is in Winnipeg, which is a 2.5-hour drive. We've got drive tonight. We've driven 2.5 hours in. We'll spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours here talking to people and chatting, and drive the 2.5 hours back. So that builds credibility. If we're willing to do that, then people know we're not just going to run away, and people see on social media and, you know, networking events, it builds all the time. Consistency builds.
Yeah, there's another local investor, Ken. He drives in from who knows where. He's always telling me he's driving in from here or there. And I always do give him a lot of, you know, respect, because it's like, you know, especially in Manitoba in the winter, it might be a challenge just to make the drive. So for you to commit 4 hours to spend 2 hours really does show the people there that you're serious, that, you know, you're here to make connections and provide value. So with the multifamily space, what's the biggest difference you found between burying a house or a multi-unit, like a two, versus acquiring and getting into these larger units?
The contract is obviously, if you're doing multiple units, you need to have a bigger contractor that can handle you know, the amount of volume and make sure you get the right one. If you're doing a 12 unit and you have a kitchen installer, they usually want to do four at a time, you know, to make it worthwhile for them. So if you can do a floor at a time, it's a three, four building like ours, then they want to do that. So usually when we're doing the renovations, people obviously have to move out, and it doesn't just work out, you get a floor at a time, you know, but they won't come and start until you get at least four. And then move out. So it takes a lot more coordinating between trades to bring them into a unit. But it's quite good if you get the floors and you can start doing one and then move them into the next and next, like that, because then keep the tools on site and the material, they just keep getting brought to the same place. So
yeah, it's more of like a job site as opposed to like the flooring guy goes and does this one house and he's done in a couple of days and he's off to the next thing and he's probably packing his tools every day and in and out, so they can kind of set up shop and really, you know, go at it. Because the renovation budgets for those units, you know, from my experience, that's interesting that you say that, is like the guy won't even show up for less than four. So it's definitely the coordination is going to be a huge, you know, challenge, but also, you know, learning the bare minimum kind of helps you with the next one. So tell me about why you're excited to venture into the United States and start playing that game.
For one, my son has moved down to the States in Detroit.
Mm.
It gives us a good reason to travel as well. And the idea of us building, you know, this real estate we've got is for a lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Our lifestyle is family. You know, we have family living in Edmonton, so we'd like to buy some property there so we can still work and visit family. And it's all a business expense. It's not, you're not traveling, you're always traveling for business.
Mm.
Or by going to the States, again, we can do the scale. But also, we'd like to spend the winters in Florida a lot as well. So we're going to, you know, buy some there. So, excuse me, it's all about your lifestyle, building mm-hmm. your lifestyle, you know, building the properties around where we want to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Detroit doesn't have much of a better winter than we do, so that's probably not your final destination. So maybe you'll be the family that they visit in Florida. So when analyze, what are some things when looking to the United States that you're finding maybe different or challenging when analyzing properties down there?
It's basically the same. You get a different tax advantages, obviously, but being a Canadian, you still have to pay the Canadian tax on them as well. So there's a lot we have to work around yet, you know, mm-hmm. to take advantage of that. But we're building connections. We're part of a group in the US, and we're building connections there as well. So, and again, we've been down to the networking events. It shows credibility that we're going to travel all the way to Cincinnati and meet these great people. And yeah, and show them what we can do in Canada. And we're going to do exactly the same down there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So is there any other markets in the United States that you had your eye on other than, say, Detroit because of your son there?
Florida was... Mm-hmm. Just I've always liked Florida. My wife likes Texas. Obviously, we definitely want to stay with landlord-friendly states.
Yeah.
Obviously, here in Manitoba, we have the Residential Tenancy Board and rent control, which, you know, it's can be frustrating at times. So we definitely want to be where it's landlord-friendly, where we can let the market decide what the market rents are rather than, you know, being dictated to what you can raise them at. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, it could be worse. You could be a landlord in Ontario.
Yeah.
So when you went down to the States to look at the inventory, and, you know, what was your feeling as to what the futures look like for multifamily down there?
Good. I keep getting a lot of indications that more people are wanting to rent rather than buy single family homes. There's two generations. The elder generation want to sell their homes and move into a comfortable, you know, rented apartment, so they've pulled all the capital out and then they can retire. And then there's the younger generations where nobody wants to buy a home and think, I'm going to live here for the next 30 years or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
People like to move from city to city. You know, what attracts them? You know, people move jobs more often and are quite willing to travel to do that. So nobody wants to be tied down to real estate, and they have to rent somewhere nice. And there's a lot of nice apartment buildings that are being built
mm-hmm.
all over the North America. So,
yeah, know, built and some decent inventory built in like the 60s and 70s that are, you know, strong, sturdy buildings that are 100 or 150 units or a complex. You know, it's crazy what comes through the pipeline when you start signing up for those different commercial wholesaling like newsletters, like, hey, look at this deal, look at that deal. And, you know, obviously by the time it hits your email, maybe it's not such a great deal, but how are you finding your prospects down there?
Well, through the network that we're building as well. And we do have a wholesaler who keeps sending us deals. None of them have been big enough yet because we said to buy in the States, we need a minimum of 50 units,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make it worthwhile. I mean, if you're traveling there and doing your due diligence. So,
yeah. Due diligence is a whole other thing. So, you know, that's really exciting. I'm glad that you've come to that conclusion. I keep telling people roughly the same that, you know, Canadian real estate is great. Doing real estate in your backyard is great. But there is more to real estate than what's in your backyard. So it's great to see that you're stretching out there and taking a look at what other possibilities are out there, not limiting your opportunity just because it's not drivable. You know, or you can't go and touch it, you know?
Yep.
So are you doing property management now then with your units, or do you have a hired a property management for all the units you have?
Right now my wife does it, but she is hiring a assistant or a property manager to take over that role so we can travel more.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, then we've been doing it to, you know, to build the business and put the time in, put the effort in and put the learning in and then put our systems in place and then hire someone to take over them.
Building out those systems.
Yeah.
I always say it's really important that you understand something before you hire it out.
We believe that 100%.
Awesome. Awesome. So if people want to connect with you, they want to find out more, ultimately talk to you about investing with you, what should they do? How do they find you?
If they go to the website, which is infinitepropertiesinc.com, mm-hmm. It has all my connections on there, you know, email, phone, and social media. So.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you spending the time. I know you got to get to the networking event, and networking is one of the most important skills in real estate. So I'm glad you could carve out part of that night here for us. I really appreciate it, Darren.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate being on here. Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. And until next time, guys, we'll catch you on the next episode.